Welcome to Books in the Biz, the show where real-world business meets real-world results. Hosted by business strategist Dan Paulson and veteran CFO Richard Beltry, this podcast breaks down the stories, trends, and financial insights shaping today's companies. Dan brings decades of experience helping leaders simplify operations, build strong cultures, and scale with confidence. Rich adds his deep financial expertise from guiding organizations across healthcare, construction, logistics, and professional services. Together, they dig into what's really happening behind the numbers and what it means for owners, executives, and anyone trying to grow a stronger, smarter business. This is practical conversation, real talk, and tools you can use right now. Welcome to Books in the Biz.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Books in the Biz. Rich, you look a little chilly.
Freezing.
It's cold out there in New Jersey.
Unreal. It's May. What am I doing with it? They got a jacket.
I know. It's been the same way here. It's either hot or it's cold, and there's no in between.
No. Crazy.
It almost sounds like our subject today. We're going to be talking about inventory. It's either we have too much or we have not enough. That seems to be the discussion I have. Where we're getting into this. So last week I was out in California at a meeting for a bunch of parts distributors. And the number one question or concern that came up was related to inventory. And I think we're going to break this into multiple subjects because there were multiple different facets of the inventory issue that were talked about. But one of them that I think is key here is having too much or the wrong inventory. So that's either called obsolete or dead inventory. And I found it kind of interesting to see how they were dealing with it. Of course, they wanted me to address some of those issues on how I thought it should be dealt with. And what was also interesting is the question came up is, well, what is the right amount of inventory to have? And I said, well, it depends. But ultimately, I came to the answer that, you know, ideally you have the inventory your customer needs when they need it. And he didn't like that answer because it's like, so you want me to keep, I think it was like 200,000 SKUs on hand. And I'm like, well, here again, this is why context matters, because ideally is the question you ask, you know, if we can provide that content to our customers, that's really what we're looking for here. There's also the reality, which is when you have stuff sitting on your shelf, it costs a lot of money. And also, if you don't know what's going to sell and it sits there for a long, long time, you will end up wasting money because you've got space that you're taking up. There's a cost per square foot of that. And there's different ways to calculate that. Maybe you can assist with that on the financial side. There's everything from now, how do you liquidate the material that you have, the product that you have, because if it's not selling, when do you start liquidation and how much are you going to let that go for? Because usually, again, it's taking up space on your shelf, you're paying for that material. You don't want to just give it away, but sometimes that might be the situation you're in. So I'm curious what you've had to deal with in the past, because I know you've had a few inventory situations. So throw at me what you will. When have you experienced dead inventory, and what has been your solution to remove, unload, get rid of, or prevent altogether?
Yeah, I think the biggest dead inventory was when I was working for a company that was importing chemicals that were manufactured in Germany. Mm. And we had the warehouse here for all of the United States. And it was right before the banking crisis in 2006, 7, 8, somewhere in that range. Okay. And we always went out to our big customers, which were, you know, cosmetics manufacturers, J&J, Neutrogena, you know, big companies that we were working for, but we were small in the US. We were much bigger in Europe. But in the U.S., we were relatively small, and we were relying on sort of asking them to give us a forecast of what they were going to need, because we had lead time. We had to get that on a ship, and we had to get it shipped from Germany, had to get to here. It could be 4 to 6 weeks just to get it, you know, into the warehouse. And we wanted to make sure we had enough. So we would ask all our bigger clients, how many, you know, how many totes or how many barrels or, you know, how much do you need? And they gave us a whole bunch of, you know, information on what they thought they were going to do. And we relied on that. So we placed the orders. Then the banking crisis happened and all those guys pulled back and stopped buying as much inventory from us. But, you know, my client didn't recognize the fact that they had pulled back on their orders and we were still bringing in shipments from Germany. So the warehouse was starting to fill up. And it just so happened that one of our procedures that we put in for the, you know, quarterly review was that we did a DIO, which is days inventory outstanding. Mm-hmm. So basically it told us what we had in stock and how many days it was going to last. Well, that number was climbing. So being that that number was climbing, we started to say, well, why is that climbing? It was because the inventory was coming in, but it wasn't going out. So we were getting an excess amount of inventory, you know, sitting there waiting to go out. So our procedure caught it, but, you know, we started talking about how do we do this so that we are not, you know, behind when we find it? How do we do this in advance? Mm-hmm. So it became a search for a good, you know, procedure for how do you deal with the fact that, you know, this inventory was going to go bad. Well, the lucky thing was these were disinfectant chemicals, so they had a 2-year shelf mm-hmm. life. So we turned around and said, okay, stop shipping us anymore. Told our parent, you know, we're not going to need that much because we have plenty of warehouse. We're probably going to have to deal with some bigger warehousing space because we're going to have it for a little while. But, you know, we were able to, you know, stop our orders from coming in. And then it took us a while to get back to a normal, you know, level.
What do you consider an appropriate turn cycle for inventory on hand? I'm just curious what your thoughts are. I'll give you mine after you tell me yours.
Well, I think it goes back to Henry Ford, right? Just in time. If you can get it to come in just in time, you're not carrying those costs. So your target is to get them as close as, you know, as equal as you can. But, you know, it's not quite likely. There has to be something in there. You get a history from your organization and your buying that tells you how much should you have. And then you can start breaking it down. We had, I don't remember how many SKUs we had, you know, but we knew which products were the most popular, and those orders almost became regular to make sure those are coming in because we know we're going to sell it. There's not a doubt in our minds. The ones that are a little bit more obscure that weren't, you know, selling as often, then, you know, we started doing a separate analysis of how many days do we have on this one. You know, luckily they were standard chemicals. We weren't dealing with customized product. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or any level of customized product. But, you know, best we could do was try to figure out, you know, if someone had an idea of how much they were going to do, then, you know, we could go down that road and say, you know, we want to match that. We want to be available to our customer. I don't think there's necessarily a regular number of days or number of units or level of inventory. I think it really has to do with, you know, it has to do with your client or your customer and your, you know, buying pattern.
Yeah. So what was interesting was with this buyer's group that they're in the heavy equipment, and a lot of them were talking about a 3 to 4 times turn cycle. So you're talking about anywhere from 3 to 4 months. A year that inventory should fully rotate out. And I actually found that kind of high. So me coming from a retail background and in some cases, you know, even in the manufacturing background, typically we looked at 45 to 60 days that product should fully turn whatever you have on the shelf or in the bin, you know, whatever that might be. Once you started getting past, you know, that 4 to 6 month window, that's when the flags started going up. And once you started seeing that product slow down to where you know, it was taking that long, you're starting to ask questions whether or not you carry it on the shelf. Once you get to about 12 months, then it's time to liquidate that product. At least that's been my experience. It's a little bit more of a turn when you look at retail, because retail, typically you're dealing with seasonality issues. So whether it's Christmas time, whether it's springtime, I worked in the home improvement area. So there was different times of year where we're carrying different products. You know, in spring, you're carrying lawnmowers and hedge trimmers. In the fall, you're carrying snowblowers and Christmas stuff. So you really kind of have to look at that. You're right. It does vary from time to time, but there was always kind of this metric of really, we don't want any more than roughly 2 months worth of inventory on hand at any given point in time. It should be gone, or it should need to be replenished by that point. So as we sit here and talk about dead inventory, where now it's extended beyond that period of time, I think one of the best advantages, if we're going to talk about things like technology and AI, where back in the past, you just kind of looked on the shelf and see how fast it was moving. Nowadays, you can use things like AI to actually process your data and say, how quickly is that inventory turning? And is there anything you need to be alerted to as far as what you should have on hand versus what you should liquidate? Mm-hmm. Just looking at some of the numbers, you know, maybe you can help me on this. What typically do you use as a calculation for, you know, shelf space? So if there's a cost per square foot, how would you typically calculate it from a financial side to say, okay, you know, if this product takes up 10 square feet and it costs $100 per component and that space will hold like 10 components, what's typically the methodology you would use to say, okay, here's how much it costs you per month to hold that product on hand?
I almost look back, well, actually not almost, but I look back at when we were working on a supermarket, you know, in the supermarket, believe it or not, when they're doing their management of their product, at least the one that I worked on, they treated it like it was rent. You know,
yes.
They treated it like they were property managers, and you had, you know, all of your costs of maintaining your space and your labor, and they basically added it all up and then divided it by the number of square feet. And then they divided it by the number of shelves, because the aisles have multiple levels, right? They might be five levels up. And so they would figure out how many square feet of shelf space did they have. And then they would, you know, basically figure out, you know, what's the optimal and how much extra is it for an end cap? And, you know, you'd get a little bit, you know, more detailed. And a lot of times the more detailed it became, the better it was. But back then we didn't have AI. We didn't have computers. You know, we had the total basic, you know, basic registers, etc., that led up to a main register. And you would, you know, if you wanted a report, you got it out on like the ticker tape, you know, you know, and now you take that and you take all the details off of that, and put it down on a big sheet, you know. And I'm just so glad that computers, you know, got better because, you know, I couldn't imagine as stores and things got bigger how data would be, you know, if we had to still do it the old way. So yeah. I mean, I remember when the first computers came into our offices, when the first programs came in to just do, you know, regular accounting and bookkeeping. So I'm so glad that they got past that. But, you know, that was the way that they calculated it. It came down to shelf space and, you know, square footage of shelf space and, you know, which ones was better. And then they would assign different costs and then they would try to get the products to match up with the costs. You know, some of them was basically, you know, some of the breads, et cetera, would come in and they just rented the shelf space. It wasn't actually our inventory.
Right.
But the rest of it really was. So you didn't realize how slim the margins were on the stuff that was being sold out of there. So So to answer your question, I'm basically following along and saying that's how I would do it as well. What's the total cost of running this operation and then apply it to per square foot that I'm going to put product on?
Yeah, that is pretty much the way I do it too, because it surprised me the number of businesses that didn't have a cost per square foot, didn't have that calculated out to really understand how much those items actually took up. And, you know, if, again, if you're figuring out, let's say it costs $50 per item, you know, per month to hold it there, because this was a large equipment manufacturer. So it could easily cost a pretty significant amount per square foot for shelf space for something like that. But they didn't have that calculation. So now if you're sitting on dead inventory and, you know, let's say again, that bin is full and you're spending anywhere from $50 per component per month over the course of 12 months, that adds up to be a lot of money that's just sitting there tied up. What a lot of these companies do, because they do carry, you know, quite a bit of volume, is also they basically put out a short-term loan on some of the material that they have. So you're essentially paying to hold on to product, and if that product's not turning, you're paying interest on that material or on that whether it's equipment or whether it's parts or whether, you know, whatever it might be. So it can really start adding up and eating into your margins pretty quickly. And this is why keeping track of that dead inventory is so important, and why when I look at it, I look at turn time and how can you do a 6x turn a year versus a 3x turn. I was, again, surprised by the number of companies that were looking at it from a 3x turn and how much was sitting on their shelves. You know, something else that kind of popped up through this is direct shipment now. You know, the world's changed quite a bit. Used to be you had a warehouse, you held everything. And what I'm finding, and we even had some suppliers there that were saying, you know what, you just tell me what the customer needs and we'll, if we have it on hand, we'll pull it from our inventory and direct ship it to them. So you don't have to pay for shipping twice, because typically you pay for shipping to get the product into your shelf and then you have to turn around and pay that shipping to go out. Now, the second part's a pass through to the customer, but if you could cut that out, you know, the customer is still paying for shipping to get them their product, but you're not have to paying that shipping to get it to you. Plus, you don't have to tie up your warehouse space. So that's another way you can kind of eliminate some of that dead inventory that I'm seeing. And it seems to be that people are more, or companies are more receptive to that now, because they're also, you know, these suppliers are also trying to manage their inventory as well. And if they can keep track of that and have better numbers, better metrics, it's going to help them be more successful and keep their profit margins too.
The there was a documentary or something we were watching not too long ago, but they were talking about the fashion industry. And the fashion industry is a big one that kind of is following your lead there, where it's looking for how much faster can I get it, you know, in some degree of direct ship, or minimize the time from design to production, mm-hmm. you know, because it's all about it, the faster you get it there, the, you know, the lower cost. Right. And, you know, there were times where people would come up with designs and then they would go to production and then they would go to shipping and then they would go to get to the store. And by that time, the fad or the likability of that product was gone by the time it got to the store eventually, especially if you were manufacturing overseas somewhere and then were trying to get it into a US location to sell it. You know, mm-hmm. it was taking that much longer to get that done. And I think they talked about both, it was France. I don't know. Anyway, it was definitely on the European side, and they had cut that time down from, you know, from design to production was really fast. And then, you know, to the point where they had margin in there to now do faster shipping methods. It wasn't, you know, find us a ship and find us a container with free space and, you know, it'll get there eventually. It was, you know, oh, put it on FedEx or put it on UPS, you know, and now it was on a plane. So right. they were able to pay the extra to put those products on the plane. And, you know, it becomes really a whole piece of it. You're not just looking at, you know, find me cheaper materials, or, you know, you're now looking for, if I cut the process down and I cut the timing down, the time to cash is faster. That's a win.
Yeah. So here's one for you, and maybe you can give me some insight on the financial side of this. So you've got the dead inventory. You got to get rid of it. You got to free up that shelf space and get the product out. What are some of the techniques that you've used? You know, take the chemical company, for example. Now, a little bit less sensitive because you said you had a 2-year shelf life on that. But either way, chemicals are still taking up space, which is still costing you per square foot. Plus, if more inventory is coming in and it's not moving as fast, you know, what did you guys do to kind of start liquidating some of that stuff without losing too much on it? Because, you know, again, coming from a retail background, you made the most on the product, especially seasonal stuff, when it first came in, because usually you sold it at full retail price. You know, at some point after it's been there for a couple weeks or a couple months, you start putting it on sale. After, you know, really about 2 months, you're starting to significantly discount it, and usually much beyond that, you're really starting to liquidate it completely. How is it with like a chemical company where it's less sensitive, maybe higher cost depending upon what type of chemical it is, and you still want to move that product, but you know, what techniques do you see out there that you've done or you've experienced?
This is where you really get into that conversation of how important data really is. You know, when you're running a warehouse like that with anywhere from $2 to $5 million worth of inventory at any given point, you know, while that doesn't sound like a big number for a company that's only doing, you know, $20 million a year, that's a decent number for what we were trying to accomplish. But you can find patterns. Like this company I've been working with that company. I worked with that company near 20 years. And over time, you can start to see, here's the pattern. Here's the sales pattern. Here's the buying pattern. Here's what I need to have in warehouse. And here's how often I actually had to get rid of something. Because occasionally we did have to get rid of it. And we also had things that were hazmat materials. So you had particular costs if you had to get rid of that. So we were building that into the cost. You know, there was the opportunity at that point to put in a reserve against the sales that you have, saying some of this is going to go bad, or reserve against the purchases. So you basically track, you know, how much you have to get rid of, and when you have to get rid of it, you know the percentages. Like, you know that based on this volume, we're going to wind up having to get rid of X, you know, X totes or X barrels or however it works, right? So we would put those costs in already. So you're able to see when you start going outside the pattern, you start to ask the question, why is that? You know, why are we throwing away more than we would before? Because like you said, that company particularly, you know, was a 2-year shelf life. Mm-hmm. Try that on produce, right? You don't have a 2-year shelf life on lettuce.
You have a 2-week shelf life if you're lucky.
If you're lucky. you know, so, you know your product, you know your shelf life, you know what your costs are, you know what you can absorb and what you can't absorb. So, you know, something like chemicals, you know, I'm not going to hang out a sign and say, look, today's sale, you know, pick up some chemicals today, you know. But on other things, you might actually say, hey, guess what? We're going to have a sale. When we were selling lacrosse equipment, you know, there's going to be a new stick comes out next year. There's going to be a new, you know, startup kit. There's going to be a new, you know, set of safety equipment, you know, and when the new ones come in, nobody's really as interested in the old ones. So you gotta figure that stuff into, you know, how do you keep that from going into the dumpster, you know, or being donated? You know, what other products do you have? What other directions can you send it?
And to me, that's the last part. You kind of hit on something there, and I was going to bring that up too. So now you have a product that technically doesn't have a shelf life. Now, as you point out, lacrosse equipment, certain apparel, whatever, has kind of a quote-unquote shelf life because it kind of either falls out of fashion or falls out of season or whatever it might be. I've run into examples, though, where it's parts or components that really don't have any particular end date, death date, if you will. And I see based on emotion because somebody's made that purchase and they're assuming they're going to sell it at some point. So they leave it on the shelf indefinitely. Let's go back to last week when I was at the parts distributor conference. There was one guy there that said he saw them, the company he worked for, they bought parts when he first started. 20 years ago, those parts were still sitting on the shelf and not a single one of them had been sold. Now, you got to ask yourself the question at that point, why is that? And here again, this is why I think it's so important to know that cost per square foot, because if you realized it, you probably paid for that inventory over and over and over again and lost money on it years back, but you kept sitting there because, again, you made the purchase, you spent the money, you didn't want to lose out on it, so you keep it on the shelf and hopefully one day it's going to sell. I remember going through this with a client where we were looking at their inventory and they again have products that didn't have a shelf life per se. But at the same point, they bought stuff on discount. So they bought a volume of it. And in their particular situation, some of the stuff they bought, they knew they were never going to sell again. But because they bought the volume, they got the 5% off. They thought they saved money on it. But I'm looking at it going, well, really, you didn't, because when I add up all the inventory you have here, you know, this was relatively small business. They still had $300,000 to $500,000 worth of inventory on hand, and when you look at maybe a third of that, possibly never being sold or not being sold for a year or maybe several years, that's tying up space. That again is tying up money that you can't turn around and recoup because that product's not selling. So there's a lot of missed opportunity costs here that I don't think most businesses realize when they hold on to that inventory for a long period of time, what the real expense to it is. And that's what you were bringing up, you know, where the data becomes so important. And more importantly, to take what ends up being an emotional decision, turning it into a non-emotional one, which is once we've reached a certain timeline on our scale of when we're keeping this inventory on hand, we've got to let that inventory go. And if that means discounting, if it means heavily discounting, in some cases it might mean scrapping it and just getting the scrap dollars in. You know, so again, talking with parts business, a lot of metal. Well, metal has a scrap value. It's a very small fraction of what the actual component was worth. But the same point is cost recovery there. And it also frees up that shelf space for something else. And I think that's what more organizations need to get into, is not have an emotional attachment to the product they purchased, but instead figure out how to minimize purchasing stuff that's not going to sell. So that's either, again, direct ship from the manufacturer or better analytics on the amount of product you have on hand and how quickly can you turn that to avoid, you know, having a lot of money tied up in material that's not going to sell.
Yeah. You know, it's a little bit of know your customer, know your market, know your cost, and know what you can, you know, what you can hold on to before you have to get to that point of, you know, this is starting to hurt me. Because that's the thing people don't realize. It starts to actually hurt the overall business because, You know, when you hear those people that sit there and, you know, you show them their tax return or their financial statement at the end of the year and you say, well, you made $1 million. And they're looking at you like, I don't have $1 million. What are you talking about? You're out of your mind. Well, half a million went into inventory and still sitting in there or went to your balance sheet and suddenly you have more profit than you have money.
Right.
So it's one of those, you know, profit versus cash flow differences. And, you know, people say, you know, I'm really tight. I don't have any money. And, but you're showing this profit because all your money's going into buying more inventory. And yet if you don't sell it, it starts to climb, you know, and then, you know, once it gets really, really old where you have a big reserve against it because it's not moving, then you ever want to sell your business, it becomes something that comes back at you because they say, we're not going to buy your inventory. You know, because you couldn't sell it before, why are we going to buy it? So now your buyer doesn't want to buy the inventory that you have. So, you know, thinking a little bit as a forward looker, as opposed to now looking at what's, you know, down the line, you know, if you're headed towards a sale What does your inventory look like?
Yeah, it is crazy on how much, you know, first of all, if you are, whether it's retail, whether it's part supplier, whatever, you know, it might be, you do have to have a certain amount of inventory on hand. But it's, you really do have to use the numbers and review those numbers at least, I would say, monthly to see where things are at. You know, you were talking about that days on hand or days of inventory turn. You really need to track that continuously and make moves quickly when you see stuff isn't moving. You know, another thing that came up was there's ways to liquidate parts. And I think of this from the eBay standpoint. You know, you see a lot of stuff go out on eBay, and I don't care if it's a forklift or something like a bulb. You know, you can usually find it on eBay if you look for it. Well, that's one way to liquidate it. There are special parts buyers that will buy overstocks, you know, for a fraction of the price of what the part actually costs. And that's another way to liquidate stuff. But you got to find ways to get that off your shelf and get that out of your inventory as quickly as possible. Because like you said, Mr. Finance Guy, it can show up as a profit on hand, or if you're looking to sell the business, it can be a liability that you can't get rid of that will affect the value of that business for you.
Yep. Absolutely.
Well, this has been a very good discussion. I'm sure we can talk a lot more about inventory, and we probably will in the future. Rich, if they have any questions and want somebody financially to look at their books and see where they're tying up their money in inventory, who do they contact and how do they get a hold of you?
Send me an email at rich@xcxo.net.
That's great. And if operationally you need somebody to spend time with your inventory, I've had a number of years of experience with that. Happy to help you out. You can contact me at dan@xcxo.net. Rich, great talking with you again this week. Stay warm, and we will talk with you again next week.
Sounds good.
Thanks for listening to Books and the Biz. If today's conversation sparked new ideas for your company, the team at XCXO can help you turn those ideas into action. XCXO brings together seasoned executives, fractional CEOs, COOs, CFOs, and CXOs who step into your business with the experience, strategy, and leadership to drive real results. Whether you're trying to scale, strengthen operations, improve profitability, or prepare for transition, our experts help you move faster and lead with confidence. To learn more or start a conversation, visit xcxo.net. That's xcxo.net, your shortcut to stronger leadership and a better run business.